Here, four extracts from different radio programs. For questions 1 to 12, indicate the best option A, B or C in the box provided. The first one has been done for you as an example. Before each extract, you will be given some time to read the questions. Extract 1.
Ask officialdom one question, and you can sometimes get an unexpectedly interesting answer to an entirely different one. The BBC put in a freedom of information request for the number of prisoners who are still at large after absconding from open prisons. 401 as of last May, came back the answer from the Home Office. Hold on, the Director of Prisons then said, that figure isn't right, but, and here's the interesting part, we don't actually know what the true figure is. We're joined by the Director of Prisons now, Phil Wheatley, who is in Westminster. A lot of people, Mr. Wheatley, I suspect, will say that this is, at the very least, puzzling. How does it come about?
Well, I'm responsible for making sure that we know who's absconded, and we record all absconds, we know exactly who's absconded, and we tell the police who are responsible for catching them. We don't need to monitor the number who are at liberty. We need to be able to say precisely which ones are, so I could do a run on any name and say, is this person in custody or not in custody? What I don't have is a database that's recording the precise numbers on a daily basis that enables me to give a spot-on, accurate reply every day. I can go through all the data individually and at great effort produce a figure. It isn't sensible to be doing that on a daily basis because it doesn't add any value to the prison service. The crucial thing is the police know who's unlawfully at large, and when they pick somebody up, is that person unlawfully at large and can they be brought back into custody? That the system does perfectly.
Ask officialdom one question, and you can sometimes get an unexpectedly interesting answer to an entirely different one. The BBC put in a freedom of information request for the number of prisoners who are still at large after absconding from open prisons. 401 as of last May, came back the answer from the Home Office. Hold on, the Director of Prisons then said, that figure isn't right, but, and here's the interesting part, we don't actually know what the true figure is. We're joined by the Director of Prisons now, Phil Wheatley, who is in Westminster. A lot of people, Mr. Wheatley, I suspect, will say that this is, at the very least, puzzling. How does it come about?
Well, I'm responsible for making sure that we know who's absconded, and we record all absconds, we know exactly who's absconded, and we tell the police who are responsible for catching them. We don't need to monitor the number who are at liberty. We need to be able to say precisely which ones are, so I could do a run on any name and say, is this person in custody or not in custody? What I don't have is a database that's recording the precise numbers on a daily basis that enables me to give a spot-on, accurate reply every day. I can go through all the data individually and at great effort produce a figure. It isn't sensible to be doing that on a daily basis because it doesn't add any value to the prison service. The crucial thing is the police know who's unlawfully at large, and when they pick somebody up, is that person unlawfully at large and can they be brought back into custody? That the system does perfectly.
Extract 2.
The government's announcing changes to the system of testing in England, or at least changes that it's considering. Kim Catcherside is our education correspondent. Kim, now, they're trying out a new system. What is it?
Well, it's a number of changes which will be tried out in 10 local authorities, Alan Johnson is expected to announce later this morning. For those pupils who don't meet the expected standard in tests at 7 and at 11 and continue to be behind, those children will be entitled to up to 40 hours one-to-one tuition with a trained teacher. That's 20 in English, 20 in maths. Then for brighter pupils, there will be these new progression tests. Now, these are shorter, more flexible tests, which children who meet the expected level, who teachers think are ahead, will be able to take when they're ready, twice a year.
Is this an acknowledgement by the government that the testing regime at the moment may be too rigid?
Yeah, well, they like the testing regime at the moment. They think that it's done its job, and league tables will definitely stay, you'll hear Alan Johnson say later today. But they do think that it gives a limited picture. For instance, if you've got a coasting school where most people, you know, achieve the expected standards as a matter of course, that might not be revealing that those schools are not actually improving the performance of individual pupils.
It's the old argument about league tables only telling part of the picture for parents, isn't it? Because after all, parents are encouraged to look at league tables because they're said to tell you about a school. Heads often tell parents that they don't tell you the most important things about a school. The government's announcing changes to the system of testing in England, or at least changes that it's considering. Kim Catcherside is our education correspondent. Kim, now, they're trying out a new system. What is it?
Well, it's a number of changes which will be tried out in 10 local authorities, Alan Johnson is expected to announce later this morning. For those pupils who don't meet the expected standard in tests at 7 and at 11 and continue to be behind, those children will be entitled to up to 40 hours one-to-one tuition with a trained teacher. That's 20 in English, 20 in maths. Then for brighter pupils, there will be these new progression tests. Now, these are shorter, more flexible tests, which children who meet the expected level, who teachers think are ahead, will be able to take when they're ready, twice a year.
Is this an acknowledgement by the government that the testing regime at the moment may be too rigid?
Yeah, well, they like the testing regime at the moment. They think that it's done its job, and league tables will definitely stay, you'll hear Alan Johnson say later today. But they do think that it gives a limited picture. For instance, if you've got a coasting school where most people, you know, achieve the expected standards as a matter of course, that might not be revealing that those schools are not actually improving the performance of individual pupils.
It's the old argument about league tables only telling part of the picture for parents, isn't it? Because after all, parents are encouraged to look at league tables because they're said to tell you about a school. Heads often tell parents that they don't tell you the most important things about a school.
Extract 3.
Fear of the unknown means there's support among many Australians for places like this, a detention centre for immigrants near a busy road in the northwestern suburbs of Melbourne. Any migrant without the right paperwork can end up here, whether they've overstayed their visa or arrived as a refugee.
The government is whipping up the frenzy of, we ought not to accept these people. We are going to choose who's going to come to Australia. And of course, they will be on a winner politically because they're tapping into the prejudice, insecurity, unease that a lot of people have about strangers coming into their midst.
Bridget Arthur is a nun who works with refugees who've been held in Australia's immigration detention centres. Every day, Bridget visits this house next door to the convent where she lives and works. It's home to migrants who've been released from detention and are waiting to find out if Australia will let them stay. It's a far cry from the adverts some of them saw about Australia on TV back home. The furniture is old and musty, and they live on charity from the convent. Some of them face bills for the cost of their detention. Fear of the unknown means there's support among many Australians for places like this, a detention centre for immigrants near a busy road in the northwestern suburbs of Melbourne. Any migrant without the right paperwork can end up here, whether they've overstayed their visa or arrived as a refugee.
The government is whipping up the frenzy of, we ought not to accept these people. We are going to choose who's going to come to Australia. And of course, they will be on a winner politically because they're tapping into the prejudice, insecurity, unease that a lot of people have about strangers coming into their midst.
Bridget Arthur is a nun who works with refugees who've been held in Australia's immigration detention centres. Every day, Bridget visits this house next door to the convent where she lives and works. It's home to migrants who've been released from detention and are waiting to find out if Australia will let them stay. It's a far cry from the adverts some of them saw about Australia on TV back home. The furniture is old and musty, and they live on charity from the convent. Some of them face bills for the cost of their detention.
Extract 4.
Thanks, Sarah. The European Emissions Trading Scheme allocates companies a permit for every tonne of carbon they produce, up to a limit determined by EU member governments, and anything above that they have to pay for by purchasing extra carbon credits in the market. Well, today we're expecting confirmation that airlines and the rest of the aviation industry will be included in the scheme for the first time from 2011, but it's also expected that their emission limits will only apply to flights within Europe. Now, carriers such as British Airways, who have many routes to the Far East and the United States and so on, are happy with that. The low-cost airlines, though, serving mainly European destinations, are far from happy. And the chief executive of EasyJet, Andy Harrison, is on the line. Good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
What's wrong with limiting the emissions trading scheme to European flights?
Well, first of all, EasyJet is in favour, in principle, of the bringing aviation into the emissions trading system. The problem with limiting it to just intra-European flights is that that covers only 20% of the emissions from aviation, and therefore will have all the cost and all the regulation of a system, but with none of the environmental benefit.
There are huge practical problems, though, in including long-haul flights in the emissions trading scheme. For a start, it's been suggested that foreign airlines will sue.
Well, I think if the Commission doesn't have the political backbone to take on the Americans, it's much better that we don't have this system at all. Because, as I said, we'll otherwise have all the costs and all the regulation, but with only 20% of emissions being included.
Yes, backbone, but actually it creates the sort of practical difficulty where the whole carbon trading scheme could grind to a halt, couldn't it?
Well, we're just talking about aviation. Aviation is important, but remember, keep aviation in perspective. According to the Stern Review, it accounts for just 1.6% of global CO2 emissions. So I think it's much more important that we get a system that is designed well and will be effective, rather than we just put in another horrible compromise, which appears to tackle the problem, but doesn't.
Thanks, Sarah. The European Emissions Trading Scheme allocates companies a permit for every tonne of carbon they produce, up to a limit determined by EU member governments, and anything above that they have to pay for by purchasing extra carbon credits in the market. Well, today we're expecting confirmation that airlines and the rest of the aviation industry will be included in the scheme for the first time from 2011. But it's also expected that their emission limits will only apply to flights within Europe. Now, carriers such as British Airways, who have many routes to the Far East and the United States and so on, are happy with that. The low-cost airlines, though, serving mainly European destinations, are far from happy. And the chief executive of EasyJet, Andy Harrison, is on the line. Good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
What's wrong with limiting the emissions trading scheme to European flights?
Well, first of all, EasyJet is in favour, in principle, of the bringing aviation into the emissions trading system. The problem with limiting it to just intra-European flights is that that covers only 20% of the emissions from aviation, and therefore will have all the cost and all the regulation of a system, but with none of the environmental benefit.
There are huge practical problems, though, in including long-haul flights in the emissions trading scheme. For a start, it's been suggested that foreign airlines will sue.
Well, I think if the Commission doesn't have the political backbone to take on the Americans, it's much better that we don't have this system at all. Because, as I said, we'll otherwise have all the costs and all the regulation, but with only 20% of emissions being included.
Yes, backbone, but actually it creates the sort of practical difficulty where the whole carbon trading scheme could grind to a halt, couldn't it?
Well, we're just talking about aviation. Aviation is important, but remember, keep aviation in perspective. According to the Stern Review, it accounts for just 1.6% of global CO2 emissions. So I think it's much more important that we get a system that is designed well and will be effective, rather than we just put in another horrible compromise, which appears to tackle the problem, but doesn't.
You now have 1 minute to check your answers.